We want it to be community intensive, very community intensive. And we'd be partners in addressing the inner city food desert. Now, what we mean by inner city food desert is there's plenty of food in the inner city, but it's not always good for you. It's not nutritious. And we'd like to develop this and also train individuals to do this in the inner city so that they would have access to relatively inexpensive but nutritious food. And in a society where 60% are overweight, 34% obese, you want to have some good food so that it can supplant some of the bad food they're having. And so, and also the service learning, environmental interest, nurturing local high school students already on our campus. And this is, we have a 3.5-acre prairie garden the biology department has, and it's the only urban prairie garden in the state of Illinois. Chicago State has it. But we've already had students that will come over and do their service learning hours, and they continually to do that. We'd like to have the same thing going on in the aquaponics project. And we're gonna, it's gonna have to be labor intensive. It's gonna have to be labor intensive. We have to have a lot of students in there. And so in your booklet, you see some pictures, but this is what the facility looks like. We have this, the southern room of that building 9601. And we've, if you get a chance to tour that, we've painted it a beautiful aqua blue. We had to use a special acrylic paint, and the our facility, our painters and Mike Orr has done a tremendous job of preparing that. This should be done, all this assembly should be done by the end of this month. Then we have to fill it up, run it, make sure there's no leaks, make sure everything is working. And we have to adjust the water, condition the water, before we put the fish in there. Now, once we put the fish in there, it's all ready to go. And so by April 24th, we should be having a party. We'll invite everybody to come. And we won't be cooking any fish, though. It takes a while to cook some fish, okay? So I'd like to acknowledge the project development and construction management. It's courtesy of the Department of Biological Science, Physical Plant, Chicago State University, Dr. Wayne Watson, president, and also Alderman Federina Lyle and Alderman Helen Schiller, who was a part of the development program. We met with them before we even started this, because Alderman Schiller on the north side in Ward 46 already had this going up there. They have this kind of situation up there. And so we're following their lead, and Alderman Frederina Lyle, and both of these are contributing financially to make sure this thing works. And so once we get it up, we'll be in partnership with the Alderman and the community and having this thing sustained. So in an age where we're talking about sustainability, we're talking about going green, ecologically responsible, Chicago State actually can be the leader, the urban leader of urban equality, I mean, ecology in the country. We can actually, I think there's a lot of things that could come off of this project, a lot of different things. And we're open to everybody who wants to, you know, we have the geography department coming in, we have other departments who want to participate. We invite them all to come here and find out what they can do off of this project. So that's the presentation.
This concept started back in, I think it was maybe October. Alderman Schiller called me, and she had a concept. And that was, you know, the whole aquaponics concept. And she did not know where she could get a university or an educational institution to work with the community in making this a reality. And for some reason or another, she did not want to deal with the universities on the north side. So she contacted Alderman Lyle. And between Alderman Lyle and Alderman Schiller said, Wayne, we'd like for you, you know, can we work this out with you at Chicago State? I immediately reached out to Dr. Banks, because I knew that he had, your doctorate is in?
Well, my doctorate is in neurobiology, but my bachelor's degree was in marine biology.
Marine biology. And I remembered that, so I reached out to Dr. Banks. And this is one of those efforts where community need and university meet, and ultimately our students are going to benefit, because they're going to be involved in the research. Our students at CSU It gives us an opportunity to work with our College of Business, because we didn't hear from our dean at the College of Business, but one of his strong suits is entrepreneurship. And we hopefully we're pulling together a business plan. And unlike Trustee Rozier, I expect to see a profit. I expect to see, you know, part of one question is, okay, how many fish do we put in the 750-gallon?
Well, you're going to have four tanks. Some you're going to have fried, then you're going to have larger fish, and so on. And so when they get to be a certain size, you're going to rotate them out. Okay, so, you know.
So what's the turnover?
How long?
Yeah, what is it, in order for, to put it in layman's term, how long will it take before we can eat it?
Okay, that depends on the water temperature. So you have all these factors have to come in. That depends on the water temperature. These fish evolved in the Middle East, where the water temperature is not so cold. And now Chicago, you know, you got a really cold winters here. So you have a cost factor here. You don't want to turn up the heat too high and have to pay a huge heating bill. So, you know, that's going to vary. You know, so in the summertime, they're going to grow faster because we're able to keep the temperature up higher. We'll probably be able to keep it up all year round. We're working on the building in order to do that. But it depends on how big you want to get them, how big does your, whoever you're selling them to, how big do they want them? Okay, so some of these things get quite large, 2 pounds.
Tilapia get?
Yeah. So they get.
How big are the ones I buy at my grocery store? They're just about like this.
No, these fish get large. I should have got some pictures.
I used to tilapia like this.
I'm sorry. I also wanted to just kind of clarify so that from terms of managing expectations from our standpoint, from everybody's standpoint, is this when you talk about the food deserts and Chicago State through this project being able to actually raise nutritious and affordable food, is the focus, and should we be focused on this as a volume issue and therefore there is a chance here for this to be a revenue generator, or is this really about all of the other things that you stated? Because you talked about the research opportunities here, you talked about the community building opportunities, whether it was the high school piece or and then you talked about, I mean, is there a chance if the alderwoman brought it to us first? Is there a chance for us to essentially establish CSU as like a center of excellence around this and differentiate ourselves from all the other local institutions? And therefore, what is it that is really the top priority here so that moving forward, I'll look at this against what you said it was supposed to do, and I won't be back in here a year from now going, where's the money from the fish fry? Because that's not really the point.
Okay, so how do I see it? I see it as a place where we develop pedagogies about teaching ecology. I see there's a place where I have one of the members on my faculty is a genomicist. We're going to investigate which strains, which genetics is best for this environment, produces the most yield, this kind of thing. I see all kind of research. I see it basically as a research service situation where we're going to be servicing the high school students. Now, tilapia, if it's done right, sells for a lot of money. Mm-hmm. I'm not ruling out that, but that's not, for me, not the main interest in doing it. The main interest is to develop all these teaching. Okay. Well, yeah, he was explaining to me. We've gone over to other institutions that had this, and one was a Chicago Agricultural High School. Mm-hmm. And what they do is they have a fish fry once a month, and they take them and they fry them up and they eat them. Because the reason is they were selling to one place, to the golf, what's the place up there in Western? They were selling it to... Evergreen Park golf course.
Oh, okay.
And they, after a while, didn't want that. And there's a science to this. You got to not let them eat the algae. You have to have them only eat your what you feed them. So therefore, you have to keep the tanks clean so they won't eat the algae because that'll flavor the food. It's a science to it. And so we'll have to be working out all those things. Mm-hmm. But tilapia can go for a lot per pound if it's done right. And that's what we want to find out. How do you do it right? At the same time, training students, because it would be nice if we can have these things in, on the south side, develop these aquaponics. Now, we're having this initiative with these Haitian students, and a woman came from Haiti, and she, you know, somebody told her that I was doing this, and she would like to talk about training students from there to take this technology back there, because there really is a food desert there. Where, you know, so this is another thing that we, you know, that we can be doing. So I'm not ruling out that we're going to make money off this thing. I'm not ruling that out, but that is not, you know, for me, the primary impetus to do this.
Trustee Butler, you know, our intent, our mission is education, no question about it. But let me be honest, when the Alderman first approached me, their concern is trying to provide food to their community. Mm-hmm. They were not interested in education, they were not interested in research, they were interested in, Doc, we're trying to get community, we're trying to give, you know, fish at a reasonable price to the community. Mm-hmm. So there is an opportunity where we can make some profit here. Mm-hmm. You know, is it going to balance the budget? No. Mm-hmm. But can we make, can it sustain itself, and can we make a profit? Once again, that's where I'm going to look to our dean from the School of Business. We need to develop a business plan. Mm-hmm. We need to work this. It's a good challenge. This is what the Alderman's intent was, so I don't want to mislead you.
No. I just wanted, and I think it's a very exciting undertaking, and I think that for the research opportunities alone, that it would be worth looking at. As a former marketing person, I love what I think it could help do to position CSU for having these centers of excellence. I think that's going to be potentially very good for the brand going forward, and that those kinds of things can attract mm-hmm. other money. So I'm supportive of it even before we get to
Alderman Schiller, she contacted me last week, and she wants to know, can we put one up in her ward now? And as you know, she lives pretty far north.
Right.
And, but, so there is an opportunity here.
Okay.
I want to say that we also have intentions and already started investigating a Department of Education for grants mm-hmm. to educate students. We've also, you know, we're looking at a lot of different funding sources. And when we say, you know, it's maybe hard to sell the tilapia, well, it's not hard to sell the vegetables that we're growing. Because the vegetables we're growing are really, there's some basil that they grow at Chicago Agricultural High School, mm-hmm. unbeatable. You will never get that kind of flavor from any other vegetable. I've never seen anything like it. Mm-hmm. So the vegetables that we grow, we'll be able to sell those and may be profitable.
But we are going to have to make sure we clean the site.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, especially if we go outside to make sure that it's not a brown area.
You know, no, the hydroponically, I'm talking about the hydroponically.
Okay, the hydroponics, no problem. Yeah, but if we go outside, we got to make sure.
Right.
All right.
Right.
Thanks, Dr.
Thank
Banks.
You.
Thank you.
No, I think that's great.
Okay.
There's no resolution. That's it.
Yeah. Yeah, that was it.
Yep. Anything else, Mike?
No, sir. Great. Not if it's okay with you.
Nope.
Guys.
Thank you.
I have a question.
Okay.
I have a question. It's related to the CTA and Metra one-stop section that you were talking about.
The turnaround.
Yeah.
Is that what we're talking about?
Yeah. You were saying about 97th Street. You were.
Yes, sir. That was part of the CREATE program under the state of Illinois and Metro. But I think more urgently, we are currently meeting with the CTA, making revisions to the turnaround area so that we can accommodate private vehicles as well as have them also, and not so much interact, but have access to the same parking area for dropping off students. Mm-hmm. And the CTA still, until Mr. Cage, he's not here now, until we resolve this whole issue of the new contract that we would enter into with CTA for rehabilitating the area, and how much longer are we going to allow them to rent that space there. I don't think any of that has been resolved at this point here, but you guys know better than us.
Absolutely. Is it close to being resolved? Oh, well, you said you have to speak with... with that?
Well, again, it's something that, owing to the size of what the CTE is proposing, it may have to come back before the board before you can go ahead forward with it. I don't know. All I know is I'm meeting with the CTE tomorrow at 1:30. Is it 1:30?
Yeah.
Well, 1:30 tomorrow, and that's to look at, offer our recommendation as to how we see the area being revised.
Okay.
And in addition to that, we're also entertaining a new roadway to basically take away all of this unnecessary traffic that's going into the parking lot back there. This has to cross between the CTA buses that come and stage in that area when they return to campus.
Yes.
What we're looking at is bringing in a roadway from 95th and Eberhardt into this parking lot. Right,
yes.
And exit and entrance at 95th and Eberhardt to keep those cars away, because the present entrance into will not work with the CTA coming into the turnaround. So we're looking at building a new roadway into this lot, as well as being able to accommodate cars and CTA buses in that turnaround.
And you say this lot, you mean the library lot?
The library parking lot.
And at what cost is that roadway going to be?
We have preliminary costs that we are putting together from one of our civil engineers that we requested to do a feasibility study on it. It's not exhaustive enough at this time here, but we're just looking at the logistics of bringing the roadway in. Of course, it'll also encompass drainage, lighting, re-landscaping, all of the things that you're more than acquainted with involving putting in a roadway. So I would like to defer any preliminary number until we have something a little bit more substantial to go by.
Okay. We do have on the drainage, which is a big cost for the roadway. My sense is we have access to the sewer line that runs on 95th Street, right?
Yes, sir. But the problem there is that your topography shifts. If okay. You'll notice, your
it's going the wrong way. That's why I was going to say, how do we
you. Exactly?
How do we overcome that?
Well,
we'd have to go down.
We would either have to go into the drainage that we have in place and the drainage structures that are in place inside the parking lot right now. Right now, you have essentially three drainage structures inside. They run parallel to the north curve. Now, as we crest and turn back to the city, then we'll be able to divert our watershed back into the city and pick up their drainage structure.
Which may take us to King Drive.
I doubt that we go to King Drive, because we have drainage structures all along our curb line maintained by the city.
Okay.
And you notice they've been out there already vacuuming out those structures.
Okay. Any other comments?
One more. I spoke to you probably about 2 or 3 months ago, and it was in relation to the possibility of building a park and ride here on campus, right along 95th and Cottage Grove. Has there been any, talks maybe between your staff or about pursuing something like that with the CTA?
Well, I don't think that would be part of my staff's responsibility. I would always have to defer back to
Dr. Watson. Well, I understand that, but just
you
asked
something about what would be the feasibility
yes.
of doing something like that.
Yes.
I told you anything is feasible as long as you have some money.
You okay with that?
Yeah, I guess I have to be.
Thanks, Mr. Orr.
Yes, sir. Thank
Thanks,
you.
Thanks, Mr. Watson.
Thank you.
Like to invite public comments.
It's been a long wait, thank you. I'm here, my name is Dr. Joseph Brasnow. I'll tell you a little bit more. I'm here with two of my colleagues, my old Catholic friend for over 25 years.
You might want to sit down because we can't hear you.
I never had the honor of addressing this board in a long time. I did it in 2002. I'm here with Michael Catlett and my friend Maurice Benton. He stepped out for a minute. He was the former chief electrician at this campus. And Maurice Benton and I know more about this campus than anybody in this building. And
I'm sorry, I didn't hear your name.
Dr. Joseph Rathnow. I'll give you a little bit about me so you know about me.
Okay.
I started here when I was 5 years old, and it's a long time ago. Michael, could you hand me the bottle of water I got there in a bag? I played on the old campus as a kid. I graduated from Parker High School, went to Chicago State University, when it's called Chicago Teachers College. I got a bachelor's from Chicago State in industrial tech. And then from there, I went to teach at Hyde Park High School, continued to work on a master's degree, got that from Chicago State. When I finished that, and I was teaching at Hyde Park High School, and that's when I met Mr. Finney, when I was back teaching at Hyde Park High School. From there, I was working on a second master's at the University of Chicago, still teaching. And in 1968, I started teaching at Chicago State, and I was also have 6 years in on my PhD at the University of Chicago in school administration. And I earned a master's and a PhD in school administration from the University of Chicago. And then the day I passed my orals at the University of Chicago, at 73, I was sitting on a big rock in front of law school, and I said, well, I can go in there and register, or 10 years from now, wish the hell I had. So I went to law school at the University of Chicago, and I also have a law degree, and I'm a practicing attorney in both federal and state court. Only thing wrong with me is I'm 74 years old, and I'm getting tired. And I'm involved in this because it's very, very important to me. I've got a love for Chicago State. Even after I retired from here in 03, I came back and been working for the university for the most part without much pay or no pay, and helping to keep the program in industrial tech going. I'll talk fast, but I probably should slow down. And
respectfully, Doctor, thanks for the background. I appreciate that.
Okay.
We do have an agenda. I'm a bullet point type of person, so.
Okay, yes, we do have an agenda. I'm sorry.
You could hit those
couple things.
I don't want
to slow
you
down, but I've got an awful lot to say because I've been working on this problem since I heard about it in early January. I wrote the president 8 or 9 letters, none of them he responded to. And
so, may I say something?
Yes.
You and I have talked extensively.
We what?
You and I have talked extensively in a public setting.
We don't talk extensively. You listened to me at the town meeting you had?
Yes, sir.
And I was in a bad way that day. We didn't talk much. You listened, but you didn't respond.
And my staff has spent quite a bit of time with me.
I love your staff. They're good people.
Okay, so there has been a response. There has been a response to what you put into us.
No, they haven't responded. I gave them more materials that they asked for, but they didn't respond to any of my questions or issues or letters. They wrote nothing. They answered none of my questions. I tried to get an appointment with you, sir. I wanted to take you on a guided tour of the technical facilities. You never responded. In fact, nobody wanted me to take them on a guided tour. And I know that facility is better than anyone else, because I designed most of it and built it for this university. And the replacement cost of that facility is around a little over $3 million. And now I've heard that they want to gut it and destroy that facility. And it's an economic engine. And as I wrote in the proposition, you'll have to excuse me, I'm not really feeling it. I waited here too long today to speak. And when you're a diabetic and you got a few other problems, you don't function as well after a certain number of hours. This is a petition. First of all, I gave most of you a copy of one of my colleague did. A petition pursuant to the Constitution of the United States of America and the Constitution of the State of Illinois. I tried to make it simple. It's a proposition. The State of Illinois is in an economic crisis. And Governor Pat Quinn and Wayne Watson, president of Chicago State University, it reads, shall use all of their authority and influence to preserve and protect the $3 million industrial technology laboratories at Chicago State University for the use of the people of Illinois. For they are the best designed and equipped facilities in the state of Illinois and a real treasure. They're magnificent. When I built that place, we put in thousands of hours, and not hundreds, but thousands to build that thing and to build that facility. I've got electrical wires in the floor. So if a student wants to plug in a drill or a piece of portable equipment, he just unscrews a race and plugs it right in next to his bench. I got compressed air lines all over that place so they can use the compressed air lines to blow the dirt and the dust off them. Now, another thing people don't realize about that building, there's a tremendous amount of asbestos in that building. They were putting it in when we built the place, and the architect said he and the engineer was very much worried about an explosion in that building because of the types of gases we had in there, the acetylene and the oxygen tanks. So I built a special building outside across the driveway. It blends in, you can't even tell it's there. That building would cost $1 million to replace today, just that building that I got out there. And it's designed in such a way, if a tank, an oxygen tank, blows up, the roof just lifts off. Bricks don't go flying. That's how well we got it engineered. and we got explosion-proof doors out there. I mean, it's just magnificent what we have out there. People don't realize what I put into that place. And in that place, too, I've got woods from all over the world stored in there right now. I got, you know, special hardwoods from Africa, from Asia. And we were teaching the students how to use these great woods. I mean, everything from teak to you name it, woods that cost, they're very expensive, they're very good. And we have the best facility in the Middle West, not just the state of Illinois over there. And people want to trash this treasure, and they don't know what we got there. I don't think any of you have ever been, have any of you ever visited that place and see what we got there? I'm showing you some pictures of two of the rooms.
Did we take a tour through there?
I don't know.
Was that on our?
I have no idea.
I've been there.
And what's in there is just fantastic. I mean, the students are perfectly safe. And we designed a program that since we put it in there, we opened up in 1972, not one accident in there where a student got hurt. It holds the record for the United States of nobody getting hurt in a shop full of machinery and equipment. And we trained the teachers for the city of Chicago, the suburbs. We trained the teachers to use that equipment, and we are the only certified program from here to Charleston, Illinois, 200 miles south of here. And we are qualified and certified by North Central and NK to do what we do there.
Dr. Rathoff, I appreciate the petition. I appreciate the comments. I do want to give my fellow trustees an opportunity to speak on that if there are any comments.
But I want to make sure that I understand.
Yes, ma'am.
What you're trying to do today. So okay. The first thing that you're trying to do is you want to make sure that the board understands, number one, the commitment that you've made personally and your opinion about what a treasure this is for the university. Is that fair that's one of
and
the goals?
And we want to keep it for
yes
the
or
students
no? that,
of this area.
Is that yes,
yes
or no? Okay. The second thing, then, is you're asking us to accept at least this idea that despite the $13 billion deficit that the state is facing and the fact that it owes universities around the state hundreds of millions of dollars,
yes,
that we would on face value say we're going to take this thing off the table and not look at it? Because I don't know that makes sense to me from where I sit, and so I can't promise you that I would support doing that.
You're asking a very good question. In the first week in January, I'm returning from the University of Chicago, heading west towards my home. Mm-hmm. So I decided traffic was rough to go through the old neighborhood of Inglewood, where I used to live. Mm-hmm. And most of the factories are gone. They've been either gutted or they're out of business. Chicago was built up by manufacturing. We have one of the few remaining programs that train teachers for manufacturing and construction and that type of work. We've got the program. Nobody else has the program. We know how to do it. And Chicago was built on manufacturing. And I wrote in my notes here, the state and the city are broke. Everybody reads that Tribune. And the reason they're broke is we no longer get the revenue from manufacturing. The old mercantile system that was invented in England, you put in $1 worth of materials, you make a product worth $10, and you export it. Well, guess who's bought into that theory now? We used to operate by that theory, and we were never broke. We had money. China and India are doing what we used to do. And I wrote to Dr. Watson in one or two of my letters that India and China, they remember the poverty they were in 10 years ago, and they're coming out of it using our system, and they're using our machinery, too, because when we send this machinery down to Springfield, it goes into a big warehouse, and from the warehouse, the bidders come in, and they take it out, and they sell it. And who buys it? China and India. Now, how do I know? I've been to China, and I was there 4 years ago, and I was looking at what they were doing with our equipment. They are running the machines and equipment that they take out of our shops down there in China today. As we sit here, they can take that Bridgeboard milling machine that we have in our manufacturing room. They will run that machine 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and at the end of the year, they will produce $1 million of parts on that one machine and export them to us. And we will borrow more money from the banks to buy those and put them in cars, which we're going to leverage the cars too. We are running ourselves into an economic disaster.
Can I ask a question?
Yes, sir, I'm sorry.
Because I think that you're about to lose the board.
I'm talking too fast, that's my fault.
Yeah, we've been meeting since 7:15 this morning.
I was here with you.
And we had a half an hour lunch break. So let me sort of cut to the chase. You've made this presentation now here to us, and you've made it to Dr. Watson, and I suspect that he's assigned staff to take a look at this, to see whether or not it meets the mechanical technology center needs to be rethought in terms of keeping it open. Let me perhaps say something a little bit different.
Yes.
And that is, I think that if we could look at what you're involved in the appreciation of science, and if there was a way for the people who are in the science and energy places in this school, where you're dealing with applied science, and maybe move the conversation away from perhaps just mechanical arts or industrial arts or industrial technology, and move it, let me put it this way, because we're going to have to move on, because we've got another committee, and we got a board, we got an executive session, and we got a board meeting to go into. So let me advise you, as well as the president, to have a conversation with the scientists that are here resident on the campus. You just heard the people from biological science speaking. You've got the gentleman from with solar energy sitting right back there. If we can look at what you're talking about in the broader envelope of science and technology and see whether or not there's a fit and or a marry there, rather than leaving mechanical arts isolated, it seems to me there may be a better discussion. Beyond that, I think that as the chairman has indicated, he's a bullet point man, and I'm here to his left, and I'm going to try to ask you to think about meeting with other scientists here that are in the school and see if there isn't a way to make something work.
Well, let me just make a couple ending comments here. When they decided to gut or destroy those labs on the administrative side, when I worked here at the university, I was a member of the graduate council. I know the governance system. I know the academic process quite well. I wrote my dissertation on
that
school
governance.
That
may not be helpful in terms of the patience of this board, sir. Okay. What I'm trying to do is get this matter off of the floor so that we can move forward. To give us your resume all over again, sir.
No, I don't want to give you any more resume.
It's not going to be helpful.
Just let me state a couple of facts as a lawyer. Okay. The process, the academic process, we never had the committee meetings. There were no hearings, no departmental meetings, no curriculum committee meetings. There was no discussion, never anything that was done that was required by the university rules and the board and the governance rules, and where people could testify at a committee level and they could have votes. There was no curriculum committee at the Senate curriculum level. There were no departmentals, no College of Ed meetings, and a graduate council which decides whether or not to terminate a program. For the knowledge I have, it never went before the graduate council to terminate the program. And nobody voted on it.
You're raising a due process issue, right?
I'm raising a legal issue.
Okay, that's
and
a due
one
process.
Other final
well,
legal
but
issue.
The point is this. The point is this. You're raising a due process
it's
issue.
It's not necessarily due process.
Well, the point is this, though. We have to move on. That's the point.
Okay.
And you've made your case. You've taken now 10 minutes of pressure time, and we have to move on. And I'm going to call for the orders of the day, which will then have the chairman move to terminate your conversation.
The catalog is a contract with the students. The students came to me and wanted me to represent them and file a lawsuit against the university because the university breached its contract with the students. And everybody in law knows that the catalog is a contract. And that's
well, we've got at least three lawyers in the room, and I'm sure that they can engage a conversation with you.
I would love. Now, these other two gentlemen came here. I mean, Mr. Catlett and the chief electrician. I wish you would just listen to the chief. I'll sit down, I'll be quiet, and let Mr. Maurice Denton tell you about the asbestos problem in this building. He's given you some literature. Please listen to him, because if you vote.
Dr. Rath, I think we understand what the issue is. We said we'd attend to it. At this point, we just need to move on.
Okay, you can move on, sir. and I appreciate your time, but I just do not want the university to become famous to be the only university in the United States to put a child daycare center in the middle of a very polluted area, because this is my alma mater, and we're going to get a lot of publicity that we just don't need.
Understood. Thank you.
Sir.
I do admire your efforts. This took a lot of time and effort to put together. However, I do understand the position of this Board of Trustees as well as the position of the university. And I think that you'd be better served to respect the fact that the university has identified a need to put in a daycare center. And I'm very sure that they're going to do everything that is required to do in order to make sure that the property is fully clean and ready to to house students and children.
I thank you for your words. And I was told before I even came here today, I was wasting my time, that all of your minds were made up. Thank you. He's a former chief electrician.
I'll be as brief as possible. Honorary board, honored board, please listen to this here. I realize the need for a daycare center, but to dismantle the shops and the adjacent building for this project is not wise and very expensive at a time when the university is in a budget crisis. It would be wise to consider another location on the university grounds to remodel the daycare center. Such a spot would be cheaper to remodel and done quicker. Much of the carpentry and electrical work could be done in-house. Furthermore, I don't believe a feasibility study has been done to understand what is involved in converting the shops into a daycare center. Also, demolishing the storage building to make room for a parking lot is a huge undertaking, because that building was used to store explosive gases and products in the sawdust recovery system. There's a sprinkler system, fire alarm system, underground electrical feeders. This building was also built to withstand a possible explosion. This location is not fit a place to have children in, because it has been polluted by oil and other solvents, such as is used in industrial applications. Also, the building contains asbestos. The shop has a hydraulic lift, which has a piston and underground oil reservoir. In addition, there is 480-volt and 280-volt three-phase electrical power in the shops, and the lighting is powered by 277 volts. It would be an injustice to the community, state, and taxpayers to destroy these wonderful shops when there are better alternatives. This shop is below grade and has been known to flood during heavy rains. As you may be aware, a daycare center also has to have special plumbing fixtures and so forth. It is easy to identify space, but it's another thing to make radical changes without taking into consideration the disruption of people's lives, the suitability of the space for its intended purpose and costs. I have seen most of the buildings go up and know them very well. I'm shocked also to learn the Robinson building has been shut down. It was thriving and I was working in Chicago State. This building held a daycare center, student union, cafeteria, and office space. Apparently the closure was caused by lack of maintenance, and I hope this fate does not repeat itself in other buildings. Although I'm retired, I still feel committed to the university and its students. As far as the asbestos is concerned, I have in June 18th and 19th, 1984, the physical plant ordered a survey, and the education building was found to have asbestos insulation. The ceiling area is a plenum area for return air from the heating system, and asbestos permeates this building. Any construction on that building is also going to involve the dislodging of this asbestos throughout the building.
As you conclude, sir.
And just one second. The daycare and other